Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome and thank you for visiting Booth 61 today. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing firm. We have a very exciting show for you today, maybe the one I've been most excited about since we began about 3-4 months ago. A dear friend of mine's in the studio, and I'll introduce him in just a moment. But before we jump right into the show, I'd like to introduce my partner in crime and the producer of our show, Mr. Kevin Finn. Kevin is the master at the control board, but he's also a very accomplished host as well and hosts a number of shows on Business Radio X. Kevin, great to see you again today.
It's always good to see you, Ricky.
We've had a couple of good weeks of shows.
We've had some great weeks of shows. You're just on a roll. Keep on bringing great person after great person.
Well, today's going to be a new high for all of us, that I'm sure about. I'm excited about today's show, multiple levels. As everyone that's been listening along or subscribes to the podcast at Booth 61 with Ricky Steele on Business Radio X, our goal is to kind of be a place for technology to come and listen, find out things going on in the industry, and we believe that a rising tide lifts all boats, and we really just want to make it a fun place to be. Today's guest is a friend of mine. He's been a friend for seven, eight years now. He's a mentor of mine, and he had once had the impossible task of trying to teach an ADD, ADHD business person the art of comedy. Mr. Jeff Justice, that's not easy for me to say, is a legend in the comedic world. I met Jeff through a dear friend, Mike Atkinson, who I hope is listening right now. And I took the Jeff Justice comedy course in 2006, and I did so poorly, Jeff made me come back and take it in 2007. But without further ado, Mr. Jeff Justice, welcome to Booth 61.
Great. I thought I let you take it in 2007 because your check cleared again.
Well, as Jeff says, if you will give him the money, he will make you funny.
You got that right. 6 weeks to a funnier you. And by the way, you did great the first time. I know you're being modest, but you tore that place up. You came back because you wanted more of it.
It is like heroin.
It is.
You get up there for two or three or, I guess, four or five minutes, and, you know, you're nervous as you can be, having never done anything like this before, and you get a few laughs, and you do not want it to end. And you prepared us for that in the class, but probably not as much as I just – it was exhilarating, and, again, it caused me to come back the next year.
Well, you got something there because it's impossible to explain to people what their feeling is like getting a packed house at the Punchline to laugh. You know, it's like trying to explain to somebody what an apple tastes like and they never tasted an apple before. It's just because the class only has 20 people in it, but when you graduate, there's like a packed house. So it's amazing.
You come out as behind stage and the light's on you and you look out and there's 275 plus people and you're just praying to God that your zipper's not down or something else even more tragic. But
I've seen comedy. That'd be funny.
That would be funny. Well, not if it was a see-through type thing in my situation.
That's right. That'd be scary.
That'd be very ugly. But anyway, many of you listening may wonder, what in the world is Jeff Justice, comedy coach, person that does keynote speeches all around the country? What would he be doing on a technology show? And I think that's a great question, and we're going to share with you the answer. Jeff has many facets of his career, and he's a keynote speaker, as I mentioned, but he also teaches stress management. He also does work with court reporters. So we're going to talk a little bit about all of these things, and I promise you, if you'll listen today and pay attention to what Jeff has to say, you will be a better business person tomorrow. Jeff, what got you into the business? Were you always funny?
You mean the stand-up comedy business?
Or I guess That's a good place to start.
My first recollection of having any inkling to do that was waiting to go in to see the new seventh grade and being online and being my regular, I guess, probably ADD self back then. We didn't know what it was. But Tony Carpinino, who I became friends with later on, going, "Hey, man, you're funny. You should be a comedian." And who knew? You know, years later, after spending all those years out in the hallway and principal's office, that would all pay off. But I think instinctively in high school, I knew that if I said something funny in class and the teacher laughed, I wouldn't get in trouble. Of course, if she didn't laugh, I got a chance to rehearse it, try to get on the principal. See, now you're laughing, but I got to the point I was doing two shows a day. But yeah, I went through a series of business, went through college and everything, and tried my hand at business. But I always wanted to be on stage, I think. I just wanted to be an entertainer. I'd married an entertainer. I just liked that whole spotlight thing, but I was too nervous to get up there and just talk to people. And I had magic as a hobby. And I started doing close-up magic for people and basically would bore to death anybody that would sit there long enough. And after a while, I started adding humor to it, getting funnier. Then one night back in, I guess, 1979 or so, I was at the old Excelsior Mill.
Oh, wow.
And I had enough drinks in me watching the show there, and there was a guy doing comedy magic. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm funnier than this guy. And went up there, talked to the manager. He said, sure, come on back next week you can do 20 minutes. And I had no show whatsoever. Went home, put together 20 minutes, came back there, got laughs, and the rest is history.
So that was 79?
79, and I wound up moving up to New York, sold everything I had, took that $20, moved to New York, and moved back into the parents' house. That's an exciting thing at 30 years old, isn't it? Mom, Dad, I want to be a comedian. Get in the basement with your brother. But went up there and auditioned, passed, and started doing stand-up comedy in New York. And like I say, the rest is history again.
So never destined for the 9-to-5.
Never. I tried it. It just didn't work for me. I always thought I was smarter than everybody else, I think. Had better ideas than the people that have been doing it for 20 or 30 years.
You too?
Yeah. So, yeah, that didn't work out well. I was in a partnership, though. I was in a partnership of a chain of magic shops that actually wound up growing to be the largest chain of magic shops in the world, probably the universe. But I was fortunate. I was able to get out of it right before I started making money. So.
Well, that's good. You know, buy high, sell low.
That's
keep
it,
your,
man.
Keep your tax burden down.
That was perfect. I had it down to zero.
How did you go from being a top headlining comedian? I know you did comedy clubs all across the country. You've been television. You've been just in so many different mediums. Now you're a motivational humorist, and you do keynote presentations on managing stress. What was the transition from you from coming off the road into really concentrating your business out of the Atlanta, Georgia area?
It started with love, Ricky.
Love.
Love. I fell in love with a beautiful girl down here, Diane Pfeiffer at the time, and couldn't ask a woman I loved and respected to move up to New Jersey, where I live, so I came down here and was traveling for a while. We had our first daughter, Jenica, and once she got to be about 3 and a half, we couldn't lie anymore and sneak her on Delta for free, so I was traveling by myself, and yeah, you're married on the road 6-7 days a week. It's kind of lonely. And you know me, I've always been a clean comedian. You know, that's one of the things I always push is, you know, don't curse. You can be funny without curse, and you can do anything. And I'd be performing at the Punchline, and there were local agencies like Axtell and people like that that would come in and see me and say, you know, you'd be good for like a luncheon. You know, we got some business luncheons. So I started doing those programs, and I noticed they were usually on-site, and people would come down. They'd be so stressed out, they'd be white-knuckled. And, you know, by the end of my 45-minute presentation, they'd been laughing for 45 minutes. All of a sudden, they were relaxed. You know, they're coming up going, ah, that's what I needed. And I feel I can go back to work and not stick my boss in the shredder. Thanks, man, I needed that. And I started thinking, well, you know, maybe there's, you know, a connection between this humor and stress management. And read everything I could on it, all the articles, all the books that I could find. And a buddy of mine asked me about doing a program with him. He was going to do improv, and I was going to do humor and stress. And that was the start of it. And I started adding it to my business presentations and then wound up becoming a keynote speaker with it.
I think you have a book or a CD about stress and humor in the workplace.
I do. Laugh more, stress less, and avoid getting burned out.
And how could I get a hold of that book?
Oh, I was going to bring you one. You could go on my website, jeffjustice.com, order one there.
Jeffjustice.com.
And you can order them one at a time, hundreds at a time. A lot of times when I speak for companies, they'll buy one for everybody. Plug, plug.
I know that Diane was also an entertainer as well. Wasn't she a traveling musician?
You know, you want to get started, we could do an hour on Diane. Okay.
She's matter a fact, fascinating woman.
Right now, where's Diane?
She's with the president's wife.
She's with Michelle. Her and Shell are having lunch up there. She's at the Legislative Wives Luncheon, and they had bought – Georgia was in charge of the gift baskets this year, and they bought like 1,700 boxes of Diane's delicious grits bits to put in the bag. So she got to go up there with my oldest daughter and enjoy that. But Diane used to be a backup singer. First she was a chemist, then she was a backup singer for Tammy Wynette. So she traveled the world with her, which was pretty cool.
Providing chemistry and chemistry. Stuff to keep her to stay with George Jones a little bit longer.
I have nothing
probably,
to say.
Probably took
that.
Some drugs to do that, I would imagine.
My lips are sealed.
But and then Diane was a songwriter. She's had like 43 of her songs cut. Now, you may not own this album, but Debbie Boone's You Light Up My Life album, Diane has two songs on that.
Wow.
Perfect Fool and Free to Be Lonely. So she's made some money and fame on that, and like I said, had her own album, toured the world with that, and then she got into her popcorn cookbook, and then her grits cookbook, and now she has her grits empire, which is gritsbits.com.
Well, I've enjoyed some of the grits bits, so
someone
wanted to pick them up, no question about it. Somebody can go to gritsbits.com and order from Diane directly.
You can order them by the truckload or just by the box.
Let's talk a little bit about, I am, as you know, a person that is very serious about my faith, and I know in the Bible, the great King Solomon wrote in the book of Proverbs that a merry heart does good like a medicine, that humor is good for you. It releases the endorphins. It makes life better. Does laughter actually have health benefits? I assume that the Bible says it must be true, but give me your take on that and what you've seen to be true.
Ding, that's the right answer. If the Bible said it, it is true.
Ding, amen. Okay. Amen.
That's it. Yeah, it's oxygen. More oxygen gets to your bloodstream when you're laughing. It means more oxygen gets to your brain. You can be more creative. It helps build up your T cells, helps you fight cancer, helps it build up your immune system. Laughter gets your brain to produce an endorphin-like effect. And endorphins are your body's natural painkillers, about 100 times more powerful than morphine. And Dr. Fry at the University of Chicago, I know we need some statistics for your left brain tech people out there. Dr. Fry says that laughing 100 times a day has the same effects on your body as an internal aerobic workout as 3 minutes on a rowing machine.
Wow.
All right, not pulling the handles, just sitting there, but you know. No, really, it really does have that effect. So if your listeners understand what I'm saying, I think they do. You know, for those of you that go to a health spa, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, I say drop the membership. You can go to the Punchline here in Atlanta 2 or 3 times a week, and that way you can get in shape, smoke and drink at the same time. Now, that's bad information. Don't listen to that. That's evil. But it does. I tell you, one of my favorite things lines was from Buddy Hackett because they talked about anger.
Right.
And, you know, people go, oh, you know, anger is great for you. You need to release it and stuff. Or, you know, you sometimes just need to hold on to anger. And Buddy Hackett would always say, when you're home being angry, the person that made you angry is out dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just destroying you because it has the opposite effect. It also breaks down the T cells, breaks down your immune system. I'm sure you've had stress-related things over your lifetime, you know, whether it's back pain, grinding teeth, stomach ache, ulcers. I mean, that's all stress-related. And if it's stress-related, it means it's just in your mind. It's your thoughts that are causing it. So
yeah, I found that the madder I get at someone and the more upset and the more grinding I do it myself, it isn't causing them a moment's pain. The only person that's causing pain is me.
Matter of fact, if they intended to get you mad, they're getting more bang for their buck, aren't they? Yeah, right?
A lot of truth to that.
Oh, good. Ricky, you still ticked off? Yes.
Send your thank you card.
Right. And you ever notice people just can't be happy? Yeah, everybody knows them in their life. They just like to hold on to that. Like a friend of mine, nicest guy you ever want to meet until you put him behind the wheel of a car. And, I mean, he just would get nuts about it. And to this day, there's a place right outside 285 that he got a ticket like 10 years ago that he felt he didn't deserve. And to this day, every time we drive by it, it's like, that's it. That's where it happened. You know, Robert, you know, hey, let it go. Do some yoga or something, man.
But laugh a little more.
That's it. You know, and in my comedy class, that's one of the things that I've always loved is that people that come back later and talk to me about it, like my good buddy of mine took the class years ago. And then like 4 or 5 years later, we're all together on New Year's Eve. He goes, you know, I never told you this, but before I took that class, I just took life so seriously. And really, I mean, it just really caused me a lot of stress, a lot of anger. Because that class, I learned to laugh at myself, take myself lightly, and he's told me, it's changed my life completely. because now I don't care about anything. But I go, no, well, maybe you should care about some things, but it's just, things didn't stress him out like that anymore. And that's a great thing when you're trying to develop humor. When things happen to you that normal people see as being bad, you're saying, this is going to make a great story one day. Oh, I'll really be able to laugh at myself with this one.
You mentioned a little bit earlier, and I really appreciated it because I am not a person, although I know all the words in the dictionary and used all of them, most of them many, many times, I'm not a big guy for vulgarity and that sort of thing. And when I went through your class, that's taboo. That's something that, you know, a damn or a hell may slip out every once in a while or be part of the an adjective.
An occasional ass.
Yeah.
Once in a while we have...
But it doesn't get to the real bad words don't get shared, and I really appreciate that about you, and I think that you use the examples of Cosby and Hope and others and
Brian Regan, Kathleen Madigan, all great comedians, very funny and very clean. Seinfeld's another one. But in my philosophy in the class, and I think I mentioned this a little before, is that, and I fight people. I probably had people in your class that wanted to curse.
Landry. Oh, excuse me. I didn't say that out loud, did I?
He's a funny guy, though.
He is funny.
But my thought is this, is that if you can go on stage the first time and be clean and get laughs, you can do anything. But if you go on there and curse the first time in order to get laughs, that's all you're ever going to do. And I got to tell you, you know, very many of my students, you know, once they go on into comedy, some of them let some slip in here and there and stuff. But I also have ones that go, thank you so much for getting me on the right path to stay clean. I get so much more work than these other guys because the headliners like me because I don't curse.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, about maybe 5% of the people that take the class actually want to be comedians. You know, most of them are business people, normal people, bucket listers, things like that.
You know, in workplace today, we try to be as politically correct as possible and try not to offend anyone, and I think that's a good thing to – always treat people with great respect. But, you know, humor is a lot of times poking fun. And I guess the best person I've found to poke fun is at me and my wife and my children. And my wife and children at home, so I get to do that from time to time. But at work, if I make fun of my boss or someone down the cubicle away, that doesn't work so well. What are some of the safe subjects at work that you can use to make things humorous or lighten up a day?
Well, you named the number one. Is yourself. You can't go wrong poking fun at yourself. Inanimate objects, the computer, the people that aren't there, maybe the everybody has the person as the customer support person. You know, nobody likes those the customer service people. And now that, you know, you can't even get somebody that really speaks good English on it. I mean, you know, you ever call somebody in India and like they're pretending like they're American, you know, hello, this is Ricky Bobby. And you go, no, it isn't. Never stop that. No, yes, it is. I'm thinking one day, do you think when people in India call customer service, they get a guy in Alabama going, this here's Sanjay. Those are the weird things that go through my head. Okay.
So just about anything in the office outside of attacking a person is doable.
Yeah, there's universal things that cause people frustration. It might be the crappy Coke machine or the ice machine that never works. It might be the air conditioning that rattles all the time. It might be the phone system. Usually when I'm going in to do a keynote, that's my first thing is I send out a PDF form that you can fill in. And that's my question is, send this to a bunch of people, not just management people, but a bunch of people. What are the things that cause you stress or drive you crazy around the workplace? And I'll work those into my presentation if I find out it's universal enough. And, boy, some of those things just kill because everybody's, you know, thought that for years and years. And, you know, when you can find the thing that everybody has universally together, they all know it. Like, for example, you know, you think this stuff is universal. But in my class that's graduating Monday night, I have a guy from Nigeria. So he's trying to talk about the interesting.
A great friend of mine, too. I just got an email from him inviting me. Kenne is a wonderful guy.
He is.
A Rotarian, a Toastmaster, entrepreneur, written a book himself. Great guy. I'm going to come Monday night just to hear him.
Well, great. I know him also like from the Georgia Speakers
Association.
Wonderful guy.
Wonderful guy.
So he's talking about some of the differences between Nigeria and America and how strange things are here. And he was saying that he just read an article about them having pot day out in Colorado, where they said like 80,000 people showed up and consumed 100,000 marijuana joints. And he's going, oh, that should be a very festival day. And, you know, that gives a new meaning to, well, you know, whatever you said. I don't know, it wasn't funny. But what I'm saying is, well, you got to go with the stereotypical thing about smoking pot. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I said, so, you know, you could say it's something like, well, you know, it's pot day out in Colorado. You know, they said 80,000 people showed up. And it was reported they consumed 100,000 joints and 200,000 Big Macs. And he's going, well, why would they do that? I go, well, because they'd have the munchies for smoking the pot. He's going, what's munchies? And of course, you know, he's like 75 pounds.
Right.
Like this little skinny guy. So in the class, we had to explain to him what munchies were. Because he had never smoked pot, obviously. Not that I know anybody that has, but from what I've heard, I've read that munchies things is a big thing.
I had to quit smoking pot myself because of that hunger issue. I would light a joint, smoke about half of it, put it out, and eat the other half. So
that's munchies.
That is the munchies. That's bad stuff.
I bet you weren't popular at parties.
No, I wasn't. No,
damn
I wasn't.
It. Eat the other half.
As you know, I do some public speaking from time to time, and many people in our audience make presentations. I know we have some technology lawyers. We have some venture capitalists. We have some young entrepreneurs that were here a couple of weeks ago. All of us are getting up making presentations either internally in our companies or to outside public. What are the benefits of humor to make presentations even better and more poignant?
Well, first of all, it's going to hold people's attention. They say that if you start off with something humorous at the beginning, it creates great expectations. Because how many times have you gone in to hear somebody speak and they start off bone dry and you're thinking, oh, man, I can't believe I'm going to have to go listen to this person speak. And then you hear them speak and you're going, oh, it's as bad as I thought. But then they start off with something humorous and you go, maybe this won't be as bad as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually a mathematical formula that if you start off with, if you're a business person, not an entertainer like myself, and probably people expect you to be funnier than this too, but if you're just a business person and you start off with something humorous and you create that great expectation of good things to come, you should then use humor every 7 minutes or so. Because about every 7 minutes, the audience will start to drop down again. And the humor could be anything. It could be something funny you say. It could be humor slide. It could be natural humor, something funny that happens in the room that you allude to. It could be an ad lib. It could be anything. So it doesn't have to be prepared humor. But about every 7 minutes, and then usually you close on something humorous as well. But it relaxes the audience, puts them at ease. It also relaxes you. When you know how it is when people start laughing, physically all of a sudden we start to relax more too and get more in the moment. It helps people remember. When you tie something that you're trying to get across, and I always tell business people they should never, ever use humor unless it's to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to just tell a joke. You don't want to start up there and go, oh, hey, you know, three guys walk into a bar, you know, and everybody's like, no, shoot me now. Unless you could start off with saying, you know, this is a story that you might have heard before, but I think it really makes this point. Then mm-hmm. audience is going, okay, he's telling an old joke, but he's telling it to make the point. You can use humor in serious, dry material. Like, let's say you're talking about statistics. You know, what's funny about statistics? Really, you know, not that much. But you could allude that fact. You could say, you know, statistics are very confusing to people. It's kind of like the time that Yogi Berra went in to order a pizza, and the waitress says, you want me to cut that in 4 slices or 8? He says, you better make it 4. I don't think I could eat 8. Uh-huh. Right? Statistics are confusing.
They are.
And that right there is called the sandwich technique. You say, you make your statement, the point, statistics are confusing. You use some humorous story, analogy, quote, whatever, to drive your point home, and then you repeat the point again.
Mm-hmm.
And you're quoting famous people. You know, that's great because people always want to hear what famous people had to say, and if it's not funny, hey, you didn't say it, they did. Like John Glenn, they asked him about the first time going up into space. They said, what were you, you know, was that stressful to you? What were you thinking about right before you took off? He said, right before we blasted off, it suddenly occurred to me that everything that I was sitting on top of was made by the lowest bidder. That's stressful.
No question.
Yeah, so I'll have people come and ask me to help them with their stories. You know, Becky Blaylock.
Becky Blaylock, everyone knows, former CIO of the Southern Company, and she's written her own book now.
Actually, I did the humor in the book. They contacted with me to go through and add the humor.
Wow.
So that was kind of cool. But I had been coaching her years ago. As a matter of fact, it was funny. During one of our sessions, I came up with something that, you know, it was one of those moments of illumination. And we were watching a video of her on stage, and she was talking about all the great awards that Georgia Power had won. And finally I said, stop the tape. I said, let me ask you, are those important awards? She goes, oh, yeah, they're like, you know, J.D. Power. They're like the best awards you can get in our business. I said, it sounds like you're reading your grocery list. Mm. You know, you're not emphasizing anything. You're just reading them. Like, I said, because you've said it 100 times. You know, you've got to give some life to these things. And at that moment occurred to me that it's your voice and not your words that tells the listener what's important. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a problem that so many executives have, is that they feel everybody's just enamored and hanging on their every word because they're the executive, or that these figures that they are quoting, where they're reading the 500 words on each PowerPoint slide, are so important everyone's going to listen. But it's your voice. It's how you emphasize things. You know, you're saying this is what's important, as opposed to this is what's important here. Mm-hmm. You know, this is valuable information. You should really pay attention, Ricky. Okay, this could change your life.
I watched you do that in teaching the class, and we knew when you were wanting us to really pay attention and when you really, really, really wanted us to pay attention.
Well, you remember the example I gave in class about how emphasis can change the meaning. And I believe the example I gave, which is if I said, I didn't steal the money, what was I saying? That I didn't steal the money, right? I didn't steal the money. You know, each time you put the emphasis on a different word, it changes the entire meaning of what you're saying. And that's a hard thing to do with my students and with the people I coach a lot of times, because a lot of people feel monotone is very safe and it's very boring. They've got to get outside that box and give it that delivery. So, matter of fact, if they come Monday night, they see people doing that for the first time who definitely didn't ever emphasize anything in their life before, and for the first time they're having to, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Some people will listen to this or listening live right as we are sharing live right at this moment. Some will listen to it tomorrow and 3 or 4 weeks from now, so please check the Punchline schedule before you come down there Monday night, because it may not be the right Monday night.
May 20th,
Monday night. But always check back with the Punchline, because they've got great comedians that come there. But always look back for the Jeff Justice shows, because Jeff does a show 6-8 times a year. With a new class, about that many?
About 5 now. I usually try to keep the 4 level 1 classes and then one level 2. So I'll do a level 2 at the end of August and then another level 1. I think it's the October 7th, I think it is.
And I encourage everyone, if you do any public speaking, and I tell people all the time, I am, as people can tell from this broadcast, I am a huge fan of Jeff Justice, and he's taught me a great deal. But I may be a little funnier, I may have a little better delivery, but I am a better polished speaker. We spent 20 minutes walking to the microphone, just walking up to the microphone, not saying a word, just walking up to the microphone and keeping the eye contact. And how do you take the mic off and put the stand behind you? And I mean, such intricate detail that had nothing to do with humor, but it had everything to do with making me more polished when I'm on stage. And so I encourage everyone to go to jeffjustice.com.
Well, how to appropriately use a lapel mic so that you're not turning your head away from the mic and getting that effect where people are going back and forth like this all day long. But, and of course, Ricky, you probably constantly, and I know still do, break one of my cardinal rules. And it's a hard one to get people to do, is that when you say something that's supposed to be humorous or funny, you got to stop talking. And that's it. You know,
stepping on your audience.
Oh, when you came, you just didn't want to. I'm going, Ricky, you got to stop. And finally, it was like, Ricky, shut up. And you're like, Ricky, I'd kill you. But finally, you stop talking and people start laughing. I had a woman that used to do educational programs, did an hour program 5 days a week to teachers and what have you all around the country. And first day she came to the class, you ever just meet somebody just, you know, they're funny. Just by the way they talk, you know, the cadence they have. And Southern women have it sometimes. and just you just you can just listen to him and go, oh, this person just must be hysterical with her friends. And she's just going, Jeff, I don't know what the problem is. I give these presentations, I just never get a laugh. I find that hard to believe. And I said, well, we'll work on it during the next few weeks. And the next week she came in to do her first joke, and I understood why she didn't get a laugh, because a joke that's supposed to be three lines at the most, she went on for like 5 minutes. Not only did she not stop talking, I don't think she took a breath. I mean, it was just like nonstop the whole time. And I said, you know, Carol, you got to stop talking. You know, you got to stop. And she said, well, I tried. I go, you can't try it. You have to do it. So we talked and talked about it, and I told her the reasons for it. She said the next week, Monday, she went out, did a program, and just couldn't get herself to stop and went right through the thing, no laughs. And Tuesday, went to do it and stopped for a moment. People started to laugh. She freaked out, started talking again, and they stopped. So finally, by Wednesday, she said, okay, I've got to try this. I've got to do this. And she said, I just forced myself. I knew the first thing that joke that I had was really funny, and I stopped talking, and people just started laughing. And she says, I almost like dug holes in my hands trying to stop myself from talking, and I did it about two more times. They kept laughing. Thursday, I said, okay, I'm going for it. She said by Friday, she had to take 15 minutes out of her program because people were laughing so much. So she always had this humor in the program. She never gave people a chance to laugh. Mm-hmm. And so many times I'll work with professional speakers, and for some reason they feel the need to come up to me and say, well, Jeff, you know, I don't really use humor in my presentation. I'm more of a content speaker and stuff. You know, that's my thing. I don't really use that humor thing like you guys do and stuff. And I'll listen to them, and they'll have 10 or 12 different things, places in their presentation that people would laugh if they just shut up or if they'd actually deliver it. And a lot of people tend to drop their voice on the punchline. I'm going, it's called the punchline because it's supposed to have a little punch to it. Oh, really? And just business people just don't get humor at all, too. So I've had a few guys, like I always talk about my buddy Emery Mullen. You know Emery, don't you?
Yeah, Emery's a prolific writer, a great businessman, consultant, writes for the Atlanta Business Chronicle on a regular basis. Emery is Mr. Excitement, isn't he?
Yeah, maybe the straightest man on the planet. He could be. He's a wonderful guy. I love him. But when we helped him with his routine, we had to poke fun at the fact that he was so straight. And that he is this guy, you know, not a lot of emotions and stuff. And, of course, the people that knew him came to see the program. They were hysterical because that's what they think of him. And to this day, he still has no idea why the stuff was funny. And he'll call me up sometimes and go, well, Jeffrey, I did our little skit again. And then got quite the humorous response. Oh, great, Emery. But you know what? He would say it just like I told him to say it. He would stop talking when I told him to stop, and people would laugh. And you know, Tim, it was just amazing. That didn't understand. It was like a magic trick, but he was going to keep doing it. I said, great guy, but I just, you know, my dad was one of those people. Wonderful guy, didn't get a lot of humor. Had a sense of humor to an extent, but didn't get a lot of jokes. Like you'd tell him a joke and you'd go, well, Jeffrey, I don't believe you could actually build a bridge from here to the moon. That's the joke, Dad. Okay, that's the joke.
Tell me a little bit about your idea of laughing your way to the top of the totem pole.
Well, we've touched on that a little bit with using humor in business presentations. And I have gotten so many letters from guys that I know, women that I know, that have taken the class, that were in the business world, that use that humor again to either rise up in their business or to sell their business. One of the best examples we were just talking about earlier, Charles Brewer. He came to me at the beginning of Mindspring, and he knew he was going to have to go out and try to – he had just gone public and try to sell his company and the idea of his company to stockbrokers to get them to push his stock. And I listened to a tape of him, and he was just horrible. I mean, just really. It was like one of those people after like 5 minutes you're going, oh, kill me now. But in the class, he learned how to laugh at himself and how to poke fun at himself. And I heard an audio tape of him a couple years later, and he was great. And what was the key to his comedy? He was poking fun at all the mistakes that he made when he was first getting into doing Mindspring. And the problem a lot of people have in business is they want to tell you how perfect they were and how great they did things, and now maybe you can learn from me. Yeah, if I was paying attention now, I could learn from you, but I'm not paying attention because I think you're a stuck-up ass, you know? Nobody wants to hear that. They want to hear, how did you screw up, and then how did you recover from that? How did you make it better?
Real life experience.
Right. We were talking about Sarah Blakely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she talks about when she had her idea for Spanx, which was after she took the comedy class, and she came up with the name Spanx because she wanted to name it something humorous, and she knew hard K sounds and stuff like that had, you know, a lot more comic impact to it. But she talked about all of her failures, how she went to mill after mill trying to get these old, you know, Southern guys to make her new Spanx idea. And they just looked at, you know, little girl things cutting toes at it's going to, you know, sell stockings. You know, we put the toes in to make more money. And I believe the guy that finally took her on, she asked him why. He says, well, you know, I took two of them home, gave them to my 16-year-old and 14-year-old daughter, and they loved them. And that was it. And, of course, her claim to fame is when Oprah went on and said she loved him. And that was it. Oprah likes something. You're
a hit.
You're it, man.
Ron Clark found that out when Oprah held the book to her bosom, as he says the story, and the Ron Clark book became a New York Times bestseller that same day.
Oh, yeah.
Oprah's powerful.
Yeah, Diane's gone on Regis and Kathy Lee with her popcorn cookbook years ago, and I mean, that sold 5,000 books in like a day or two.
Wow.
So you can imagine Oprah is like 50,000 in just a few days.
Wow, amazing. I've had people question me about this from time to time, and including my wife.
Are you from this planet?
Yeah, well, that's a daily question. But and they asked me, you know, don't you use too much humor? Don't you take a lot of risk when you use humor in a professional situation or a presentation? And I always go back to the Proverbs verse that I used before, and I enjoy laughing. My father was a great funny guy, and my mother was funny, and I enjoy laughing, and so if I'm going to be comfortable making the presentation, but are there a risk, or what's the downside of humor if there is one in a business situation?
Well, I'm like you. I'm not going to do something that doesn't have to do with humor. My three things: it's got to be something I enjoy doing, helps other people, and has to do with humor. Right. And my thing is, if I come to speak for you and you don't want to hear humor, I'm the wrong speaker for you. Now, are there places that humor – I think definitely you could try to be too funny as a business person. That's why I'm saying that once every 7 minutes or so, because you're not doing a comedy show. You could use inappropriate humor, which I believe our politicians have proved over and over again that they can do that. But in the business area, you can use a lot of times to diffuse things. And basically the idea is if somebody has an issue that they're holding against you, once you can find the humor in it and laugh at it yourself, then they can't hold it against you anymore. And I got all kinds of examples. One woman years and years ago, I'll show you how long ago this was. It wasn't you actually paid for long distance, but AT&T was raising the long distance rates, and they knew that people were really going to come down on them about it. And she went to the press conference, and this reporter raised her hand and said, "Is it true that you're going to be raising long distance rates?" And she said, "Well, I have good news and bad news for you." She said, "The bad news is, yes, we are going to have to raise the long-distance rates, but the good news is the continents are moving closer together." Everybody laughed at diffuse the situation. They went on. And it's just, if you can use humor to diffuse it, lawyers do it all the time in cross-examination. They can diffuse everything a witness just said by well-placed, appropriate humor. Mm-hmm. One of the past owners of the Punchline has like some unbelievable record of like 98% winning his trials. He's a trial lawyer. And he attributes it to all the times he spent in the Punchline watching comedians up there and learning and understanding timing, delivery, and humor. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I just use it without even thinking now in trials, but it's just great for that. And, of course, humor gets people to like it, doesn't it?
No question about it. Right? No question about it.
Number one thing, you're using humor appropriately. They're going to like you better. You want to make sure that you're not using humor, like you said before, to put other people down, to make fun of things that have happened that you shouldn't be, you know, and you also don't want to use humor flippantly just to blow something off. Oh, yeah, that's whatever. It's got to be well thought out, well appropriated humor. What was the one that Reagan used years ago with Mondale? Mondale was going to use the issue of age.
Jimmy Carter.
No, was it Carter? Or no, it was Mondale.
Mondale about
Reagan's age, because he was running for re-election. And he was like in his 70s or something.
Right.
And during the debates, the reporter said to him, or the moderator said, well, Mr. President, he said, what about the issue of age? And Reagan didn't bat an eye. He says, I am not going to make age an issue during this campaign. He says, I refuse to
take advantage of his youth or something of that nature.
Take advantage of my – I use – basically, he refused to talk about his opponent's youth and inexperience.
Right, right.
So, and that – he was like 3 points behind Mondale at that time. Next day, he went ahead and never looked back again.
Never looked back.
Yeah. I would not exploit for political gain
my
opponent's youth and inexperience.
Yep, he was the great communicator.
He was. I don't care whether you liked him or not, but, man, that guy was good.
He was.
You know, and who were Clinton, another
great communicator.
No question about it. Obama does a great job at it.
No question.
But now, also, Bush used humor a lot to diffuse things. I remember one time he had a new admiral that he was introducing to everybody. And the guy had this Italian name that I'm not saying it because I couldn't pronounce it. It was like Gio Papalapidis or something. No, that would be Greek, wouldn't it? Be like, say, Giordani Barcelloni Matadaloni. And he tried 3 times to pronounce it, and he messed it up each time. And he said, who from this point forward shall be known as Admiral G. And it's great. The laughter.
They liked it.
And, you know, he's also used the line, you know, English is my second language, or, you know, when he's messed up things. But that's it, the ability to laugh at yourself. We're all going to mess up. If you take it as something, oh, no, I messed up, this is horrible, then that's what it is. But if you laugh at it, it's like, remember when your kids were growing up, somebody, first time your kid fell down, you know, your mom or somebody probably said, don't make a big deal out of it, or he'll make a big deal out of it, right? Well, it's the same thing with your audience. You know, if you screw up and you can laugh at it, and, you know, that CD that I did, How to Ad-Lib Like a Professional, mm-hmm. It's like, here's everything that can go wrong during a presentation, and then you wind up looking like a star. It looks like you planned for it to happen. So
that was actually the place I was going to transition to because –
Well, I was waiting, and you hadn't yet, so I was going to
– Well, that was one of the additional great things I learned from you is the power of ad-libbing. And that it's not really as much ad-libbing as it is being prepared each situation. You do have a book and CD on it that's titled How to Ad-Lib Like a Professional or Just Look Like One. How do you teach someone how to ad-lib, the Jonathan Winters who just passed or Robin Williams? You told me at one time that 90% of everything they've said it 100 times, and they look like it was fresh and right off the top of their head.
Well, now, I wouldn't say that about Jonathan Winters. I still, to this day, believe that Jonathan Winters made up that stuff. I mean, because you'd never hear him do the same things over again. He might do the same character, like Maude Frickett or something, and maybe had one or two lines that worked and he used them. But he was pretty original. But Robin Williams, I mean, as I always tell my students, nobody's going to give you $1 million to do an HBO special and you have no idea what you're going to say. Well, I'll go out there and just think of something. It's like people always ask me, they said, do you always know what you're going to say when you do an hour-long presentation? I said, I know everything I'm going to say. I just don't know when I'm going to say it. Because I'm going to, you know, make it flow. And I've got 7-8 hours worth of material, so sometimes I'm not even sure where it's going to go. It might go in a different direction, so I'm not trying to force it. I'm just kind of writing it along. But the ad-libs, you struck on it before. The effective ad-libs that I use and I teach are well-prepared things to say when something goes wrong. And you memorize them, you practice them, and I believe it was Jay Leno that said, if you write 10 jokes, you'll be lucky if 2 of them will get laughs. But if you deliver 10 what's supposed by the audience as ad-libs, probably 8 out of 10 of them will get laughs because the audience is thinking that you just made that up. And, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten huge laughs by something happening in the audience and me just making a quick comment about it, and the audience is hysterical. And if you really thought about it, it's mildly humorous, if that, but the audience is giving you all this credit for
– spontaneity.
Yeah, for making it up, quote, you know, on the spot. So with the CD, I give you all my ad-libs and for everything from the lights going out to microphone now. You've used it. You just told me you used a couple of them the other day.
Yeah, you. This is not as pertinent as it was back in the day because everybody's too young and the audiences are – they don't even understand what I'm talking about. But then I use that to make another joke out of it. But whenever the microphone screeches or something in the middle of a presentation, I say, oh, I didn't know Yoko Ono had a new album. And that was something I learned directly from your comedy class in 2006 or seven. And now I usually say, of course, that's not really relevant to you guys because you don't know who the hell Yoko Ono is, which gets the second laugh.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
The other one that I learned or that I didn't learn from you, I actually had one creative thought in my mind at some point. It went by quickly, but whenever somebody usually says after I finish speaking and do the questions and answers, they say something like, you know, that's easy for you because you're outgoing, you're charismatic, you're da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's not the same for me. I'm introverted, this, that, the other. What is the secret to your success? And I immediately pick up the water bottle and I look at it a few times and I say, vodka. You thought I was drinking water. This is vodka. And it's a stupid line, and it makes no sense, and yet every time it just kills them.
And, it's unexpected, and it's not the answer. That's great. That's the element of surprise, which is such a key to comedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, it's so inappropriate for what the guy asked you. You know, that it works great, too, because that's the last thing you expect a speaker up there to be getting smashed.
just like the signing up or getting to know you better, just going to jeffjustice.com, they can also pick up the CD on Adlibs and become good at it themselves without going through your class, at least to some degree.
Matter of fact, if anybody wants to order the CD from this podcast, whether now or in the future, if they would just put a note on there that they heard me on Ricky Steele's show, I will give them the e-book along with it for free.
Oh, wow. That's a great deal. That's great.
So the CDs were $27,000, and the e-book will be free. It's like $19.
I'm asking a redundant question for the benefit of my audience.
Okay.
What do you love about what you do, Jeff?
I don't know. I've got three jobs, really, and I've got three of the greatest jobs in the world. And there's nothing better than the comedy class for me. Even though I probably make the least amount of money or whatever I do on that, seeing people go from that first day in class, that hopeful, and like I say, you get all kinds of people. It might be the house husband, the housewife, the guy that's checking something off their bucket list, or the corporate executive, or it might be the guy that wants to be a comedian. I've actually had one woman, 85 years old, Lit Connor took the class years ago, and she was hysterical. And she'd had three careers since she was 60 years old. After 60 years old, she was on the Johnny Carson show doing ballroom dancing. Okay, it's just amazing. But I get to see people go from that first time they walk in the door, you know, all nervous and expected, to 6 weeks later, they're on stage at the Punchline, living out this dream, and just they come off stage higher than they've ever been in their life. And I say, for a lot of people, it's been life-changing experiences. I get letters and emails from people. Remember one time I was actually thinking of quitting doing it. And I was at a Blockbuster, and my corporate stuff was going real well. And I'm just kind of talking to God. And I'm walking around as my kids are looking for things, just going, you know, God, you know, my corporate business is really going really well now, and you know, my teaching people comedy, is that really doing anything? I mean, is that worth their time and my time doing that? I just don't know. I just would really like to know if you want me to keep doing this or not. And I swear, my kids said something, and I yelled out something to them, and I have this unmistakable voice, right? And from across the Blockbuster, this guy looks up, walks over to me, and says, "Hey, I know you don't remember me." And I did, because I took your class about 10 years ago. He goes, "I just want you to know that every good thing that's happened in my life is a direct result of me taking your class, and my life's just been wonderful, and I wanted to thank you." Shakes my hand and walks out the door. And I look up and go, "Okay, God, I'll keep teaching it." And that's it. I've never had another doubt since then. But, you know, that kind of stuff, and getting emails from people, you know, one guy just emailed me that he's getting to do cruise ships. He goes, "I was a doorman at the Punchline." You know, and I took your comedy class because I didn't have enough money for fantasy baseball camp, right? And I took the comedy class, and here he is 15 years later just having this great life, going all over the world, doing comedy on cruise ships, doing comedy clubs. So I get to do that, the business thing, getting people to laugh, showing them how to be better speakers, more effective speakers, get along better, reduce stress in their life. And then I do the court reporter programs, which is continuing education. And so many groups, and I'm starting to put some together for lawyers now, but a lot of these people are incredibly boring programs, and they have to get 10, sometimes 20 CEUs in 1 year continuing education units. And we try to give them high-content, big-laugh programs. So they get great content that helps them in the job, but we're going to do it in a humorous way, and I only use speakers that make it fun. And people just love it now. So now I'm doing online courses for court reporters and stuff. They can get their CEUs like that. But help those people out. They get to have a great time, and they learn something. So my life, it's always got something to do with humor.
I know you also do keynote speeches, and you did a speech for the Dell Corporation for my good friend Ben Hendrick, last year or the year before. If someone, again, wants to contact you about a potential speech to their corporation, once again, jeffjustice.com. Mm-hmm.
And I also spoke to McDonald's a few times because of you. I think you told them my name.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, I did one here in Atlanta and went over in Alabama for their managers and stuff. But, just jeffjustice.com or jeff@jeffjustice.com or go to the website. Or if you just Google Jeff Justice, it's me and the real estate guy. I'm not the real estate guy. Though I will sell you my neighbor's house, who's on vacation right now.
Jeff, I hate to say this, but our time is gone. Would you be willing to come back at some point in the next 3 or 4 weeks or month when your schedule permits? And there's a lot of things I want to dig into. I'd love to talk more about the comedy class, just not from the aspect of what you learn from it, but again, the life-changing part of experiences. I know what it's done for me. I know Atkinson. Tom Darragh, dear friend. If you start a cult, I want to be the first member because it has had that kind of powerful impact on my career and very reasonably priced. You work your butts off. I mean, it wasn't a crip class. You and I came almost toe-to-toe on a few occasions because you thought you knew the right way. And I was actually paying you because I thought you knew the right way as well. And sometimes I disagreed with that right way.
Yeah, until it conflicted with what you thought was the right way.
And I don't like to be wrong, but
I tell you what, I will come back.
You were right.
Okay. I'll come back on one condition.
All right.
And that is if people who are listening to the podcast ask you to have me back on.
All right. Well, if you're listening right now, please send an email to me, Ricky@htrjobs.com. That's Hunter Technical Resources, Ricky@htrjobs.com, and invite Jeff back because I'd love to have Jeff back. Jeff, thank you very much for being here. You're a dear friend. You've been tremendous impact and influence on me and so many, many others. And I just hope that this will just springboard some new people to take the chance on going through a course or hiring you to do a presentation, and that they get to experience some of the same, I guess, love and friendship that I've had over the last 7 or 8 years.
Well, I get a few more people like you taking the class, and I'll keep doing it forever.
Amen. Amen. This is Ricky Steele, and I finished my cup of coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next Wednesday or listen to any of our past shows anytime at Booth 61 with Ricky Steele. I always close our time together by sharing a blessing for you, for your family, and for your business. The blessing comes from the book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen. Thank you for dropping by. Join us next week for a fresh cup in Booth 61.